Super Bowl 53, I think everybody knows the New England Patriots win again. They beat the LA Rams 13-3. In the NBA, Bucks and Bulls both off last night. Tonight, the Bucks play in Brooklyn. The Bulls get another night off. Now, the WGTD updated forecast from the National Weather Service. They've dropped that dense fog advisory. Forecast for today now, cloudy and rainy with very mild temperatures and some areas of morning fog, a high of 49. Tonight, partly cloudy and seasonal. Tonight's low 19. Tuesday, partly sunny and 29 for a high. Right now, areas of fog. Headlights on for safety. 47 degrees Kenosha, 40 in Racine. Wind from the southwest at 16. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 8:11, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, welcoming approximately 150 full-time transfer students each year. Eligible Gateway graduates can receive guaranteed admission to Carthage to complete their bachelor's degrees. Transfer to a more personalized education in 4 easy steps. More information about admissions and competitive scholarships for transfers is available at carthage.edu/admission/transfer. Support for WGTD also comes from Jack and Drea, Kenosha tradition since 1911, newly reimagined for 2019. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. More information at jackandrea.com. Jack and Drea, a proud supporter of WGTD's morning show. And we welcome you to the Monday morning show. I'm Gregory Berg. Well, in a delicious bit of irony, it was not until last night that I finally got around to reading a wonderful book called The End of Procrastination. So I guess this is a book that I very much needed to read. The title, The End of Procrastination, How to Stop Postponing and Live a Fulfilled Life. This is the work, first of all, of a gentleman by the name of Peter Ludwig, who has been a consultant for a number of Fortune 500 companies, and he has worked with them on issues of efficiency and particularly procrastination and the way that it can hobble the work of employees as individuals and affect the productivity of a company as a whole. And the woman who has translated this work into English is Adela Schicker, co-founder of Procrastination.com, which also works with companies and individuals on this and other issues related to efficiency. This book, published by St. Martin's Essentials, a division of St. Martin's Press, is a really intriguing examination of this phenomenon of procrastination, which so many of us experience in various ways, in sometimes ways and to an extent that can be actually crippling. And I found a lot to think about in this book, and so I'm very, very excited about this conversation that you are about to hear. Again, the book is The End of Procrastination, How to Stop Postponing and Live a Fulfilled Life. And Peter Ludwig and Adela Schicker, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Hi. Good morning.
Really happy to be speaking with both of you. Peter Ludwig, so should I assume that this book was originally written in the language of German, given your name?
No, it actually was first published in a Czech market because we lived in Prague.
Ah.
We moved to New York, and now the book is ready in the U.S. and Canadian market, and it was translated even in other languages. So now we have like 10 languages, like French, German, and even Japanese.
Wonderful. Very good. Well, I'm so glad that this is also in a language that I can read and understand, because I really enjoyed exploring this book. Ahead of us talking about some of the insights and suggestions that are specifically shared, I wonder if both of you would weigh in on the basic question of how serious a problem is procrastination. By that I mean, how widespread? And also, do we tend to split in terms of people who are procrastinators and other people who are not? Or do just about all of us at certain points in our lives or in certain circumstances become procrastinators? What is your impression of that, given the extensive work you've done on the topic?
Yes, we have a lot of data about procrastination, and it shows us that it's getting worse and worse. Yeah, and it's getting worse and worse with social media and internet, and with a phenomenon that is called decision paralysis. Like, more things you have, the more chaotic the world is, our tendency to procrastinate is higher and higher. So we live in the world that is made for procrastination, yeah? And it's very difficult to find a way out of it, because we experience procrastination in our private lives, at schools, at work, and the problem is getting worse and worse. But there is science. This is the good news, is that science knows what to do with that, but there is a gap between what science knows and what people actually do in their normal life, in their business life, and so on.
Hmm.
So, there is a solution, but almost no one knows about that.
Right. Adela Schicker, do you have anything to add when it comes to the extent of the problem of procrastination?
Yeah, you know what? Because we travel a lot, we always get asked if people procrastinate equally around the globe. And I feel like everybody procrastinates. Everybody, even when you think that you don't procrastinate, even us with Peter, that we teach people who are not to, we do it from time to time. And the one thing is important to say, that you cannot fight procrastination forever, meaning from tomorrow you'll be the effective master of everything. But once you learn how to deal with procrastination, it's a skill that you'll have forever, and you'll be able to overcome it on a daily basis.
By the way, in talking about this, the matter of how procrastination is an especially acute problem today with some of the technology that tends to exacerbate the problem, as you discuss that and this phenomenon of what you call decision paralysis, because there are so many choices that confront us, you talk about how sometimes there is this phenomenon that is almost like an imaginary pair of scissors, the scissors of potential. This is such an interesting image. I've found it so intriguing. Explain to our listeners what this image is and how it can be helpful to kind of think about this when it comes to the problem of decision paralysis leading to procrastination.
Yeah, the main idea of the this picture is that more options we have, the wider the scissors are open. And it means that, for example, if you lived in the Middle Ages, or if you lived 1500 years ago, you didn't have that much options. But we have a freedom. We can choose the job we want to do. We can travel. We have like very wide range of choices. And our ancestors, they thought that more freedom you have, more happier you are. But this is the core of the paradox, because that's not truth. We experience this kind of paralysis like on an everyday basis. Like, if you go shopping, you now have like 40 different ketchups. You have like 50 kinds of toothbrushes, and so on and so on. So for us to make a decision is very, very difficult. And at the end, you postpone the decision, you are indecisive, and you can have a higher rate of frustration, and even you can increase your chances of depression. So I really like minimalism. Like, the cure of that is simplicity. Like, less things you have, happier you are. Yeah? So we teach people to deploy minimalism in all aspects of their lives.
Hmm. And I suppose that can help with the issue of procrastination, because one is not confronted with quite so many different things that there might be to do when, just in general, one's life has been simplified. One thing I want to make sure to mention in this conversation, although it's a conversation over the radio, is that your book is created with a great deal of attention to illustrations, and in particular, illustrated models. In other words, when one takes up this book and opens it up, you're not just seeing words, but you are seeing all kinds of pictures and illustrations and diagrams, almost one on every single page. Explain why that was so important to you in putting this book together.
Yeah, the main reason is that you have a lot of scientific books, but they are very complex. They are difficult to read. And as I said, I love simplicity, so I like to express the ideas visually, because visual cortex, the part of the brain that is processing visual information, is very good in terms of, if you see the picture, you will remember that and you can apply that in your life. Yeah? But if you just read it, you forget everything after, let's say, 2-3 weeks. So pictures are much better in terms of if you want to remember something, or if you want to explain some concepts to someone. For example, if you have a like simple picture that's explaining how our brain works, you're going to remember that because of the visual information. So I really love pictures. I draw them all by my own, and there's like more than 100 pictures in the book, but the book is grounded in science. It's very evidence-based, so it's somewhere in the middle between the science and between the simplicity.
Hmm. By the way, Adela Schicker, as we said, you are responsible for translating this book, and you have done a lot of work to help it reach a truly international audience. And I suppose just this matter of the illustrated models is helpful towards that end. What is your sense of the universality of the issues that are laid out in this book? I mean, when it comes to something like procrastination, does it matter very much whether you live in Prague or New York City or Shanghai or Rio de Janeiro? I mean, is this something that is a human situation and not rooted in any particular culture?
You know, we love the saying that says, if you can't explain it simply, you don't understand it well enough. So therefore, translating something as difficult as scientific research in something simple, then therefore can really be understood across the globe. You know, it doesn't really matter if, for example, we have clients that are from different cultures, or maybe English is their second language, or they're lacking, you know, certain skills. The pictures actually really help you to remember, to understand. And as well, when you grab the book, you know, half year later, you don't have to read all of it, even though you should, honestly, but you just look at the pictures and you're like, oh, okay, this is this. Am I really putting it in my daily life? Does it work? And we have a lot of companies that we did training, and they would have on their like boards or somewhere next to their office a little picture or a little doodle from our book, and it helps them on a daily recollection why they decide to do a certain thing and why they decide to improve in a certain field.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Peter Ludwig and Adela Schicker. Peter Ludwig wrote this book called The End of Procrastination, How to Stop Postponing and Live a Fulfilled Life. Adela Schicker has translated it. They are both joining me via telephone today to talk about what is spelled out in this book on the issue of procrastination. Peter Ludwig, I wonder if you could just briefly tell the story to our listeners of what you recount in the book's preface about when this whole issue of procrastination became so important to you. It was because of something of a medical crisis that you experienced.
Yeah, it was a very important moment in my life. I was in the last year of high school, and I was playing basketball. And I start to have a pain in my right hand. And after, let's say, like a couple of hours, half of my body was completely paralyzed. Yeah. And it was kind of a brain dysfunction or something. And I lied in bed, and I really experienced the moment that is called the near-death experience. I really thought that I'm at the end, and it was so powerful. I saw the like white tunnel as they show in the movies, And for me, that was a life-changing experience because after a few days, everything went back to the normal. I was survived that without any side effects. But the experience to like really feel to be at the end of life, it was so powerful that I think it really changed my life. And after that, I start to really invest my time wisely. And I start to find a meaning of my life, like to do something that has some higher purpose, to help the others and so on. So then I start my own company, and then I start to write a book about how to invest your time wisely. That's because the procrastination is the enemy of living the life to the fullest. It's the main enemy. So for me, it was the worst experience of my life, one of the really, I don't want to experience that again, but still, it really changed me in a positive way, because now every day is a bonus for me, you know, and I really think in what is important and what is not. So relationships are important, meaning at work, purpose at work is very important, and to enjoy the life, like to do things that you really like to do with people you love and so on. So procrastination is just the opposite of that.
Right, exactly. And, of course, the ultimate result of too much procrastination in one's life is that you look back with such a painful sense of regret at all of the time that you have wasted. And at some point in the book, you spell it out this way: every single second you waste is gone forever. Those are really sobering words. So you lay out sort of a plan for attacking procrastination by exploring motivation, discipline, outcomes, and objectivity. Just say a word about why you think it is important to attack or approach procrastination by thinking of all these different things: motivation, discipline, outcomes, objectivity. Why is it important to be comprehensive in one's approach?
Yeah, I'm going to start with the Japanese proverb. And it follows like, vision without action is a daydream, and action without vision is a nightmare. And I think that this proverb, this simple quote, really describes two main problems people actually have these days. Yeah, first is lack of intrinsic motivation, lack of what we call personal vision. So if you don't have vision, it's very difficult to start, and it's very difficult to actually do something. So better your personal vision is, more intrinsic motivation you have. And intrinsic motivation is something that it works in the long term, and it really helps you to start every day again and so on. So first chapter is about finding intrinsic motivation and finding purpose in what you do at work and so on. The second chapter, the discipline chapter, is about willpower. It's about action, how to really improve your habits, how to strengthen your willpower, and how to overcome some bad habits everyone has. The third chapter is about handling failures, because on the way to success, there are always some failures. And it's very important to not to feel like depressed. But it's important, if you fail, what is important is to start again and to improve something, to learn something, and so on. And the last chapter, the chapter about objectivity, for me, it's very crucial, because it's about critical thinking. And these days, we live in a world full of myths, full of fake news, and it's in all fields. It's in health, it's in politics, and it's even in personal development. Yeah, you can read very, very crazy advices on the internet. And for me, rationality and ability to find the truth, like find what to believe and what to not, is very important. So the last chapter is about critical thinking. And I think that in these days that are full of low-quality information, critical thinking is very crucial.
Right. And so this is a way, the subtitle is Learning How to See Your Flaws. I mean, learning how to be really honest with oneself and understand oneself. One of the themes that rides through much of this book is the notion of self-regulation, and that when someone is a severe procrastinator, something has gone wrong with that ability to self-regulate, to give oneself an order and then follow it. One of the images that you utilize, let's hear from Adela on this, is the picture of the elephant and the rider to help us kind of understand how this works. Explain the emotional elephant and the rational rider and how this image can be helpful for us.
So the idea is to simplify sort of the relation our brain has through the way how it develops between the very emotional, strong part that we portray as an elephant. That's the part of the brain that wants to be on social media, the ones that wants to drink, wants to procrastinate. Compared to the other part, the neocortex, the part that is the rationality, the idea of a little rider sitting on the top of the wild elephant trying to tame our habits and our behavior down, saying, hey, no, we need to do work, we need to do sports, we need to work on our mindfulness. And we sort of forget that the willpower really works as a muscle. And so when we strengthen it, when we're really our rider, this part of the rational brain, we train it, it's much easier in the long term to sort of take care of this crazy elephant and in that way help us overcome the procrastination on a daily basis. So again, it's one of the, for example, one of my favorite pictures because I love to see the idea of, oh, why do I want to spend my time on social media? No, wait, that's just my emotional elephant that wants to do, and not the rational rider that decides to live by the true purpose and the meaning that I have in my personal vision.
Right. You also say that towards that end, in terms of being in better control, in terms of self-regulation of the rational rider really riding the elephant, that one of the things that is really crucial to that is whether or not we have replenished what you call our cognitive resources. That is, if we are in a state where we have been in one way or another depleted, then it's very, very likely that the rider is not going to keep control of the elephant.
Imagine the crazy elephant and the poor rider that's totally exhausted without any willpower. That's why we're trying to really tell people that you need to make sure that this cognitive resource, this like willpower, is really always full in order to stay healthy and to really not procrastinate. You should do sports. You should eat healthy. You should take care of yourself. And you need to make sure that, you know, you're sort of keeping the little rider all in good shape in order to be able to wield the emotional elephant.
And having a good rest is very important. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So really to try to do nothing. It's the best way how to improve productivity.
I want to remember to say that the book is not just a book of sort of philosophy and concepts, but chock full of all kinds of tangible tools to help somebody implement much of what you talk about. And I thought one of the most intriguing tools was around this idea that you come up with of the to-do today plan or list, that it is really important in terms of getting a hold on the issue of procrastination. Explain how this notion of to-do today works.
Mm-hmm. This is a very simple tool to organize your priorities and your tasks. And we bought all apps on time management, and we saw that all apps and all tools, they use lists. And the problem of list is that you put more and more things in that list, and you start to feel negative emotion towards that list. Yeah? And then you have what we said, the decision paralysis. Yeah? You don't know which task to start. You don't know what to do. Yeah? And so we come up with a new system, and that is we call it to do today, and it's simple mind map. You just take a piece of paper and you try to visualize tasks you want to do on exact day. And it really decreases your negative emotions. And if it's visually, it's much better. If it's a mind map, it's much better than a simple list, because simple list doesn't show you the priorities, doesn't show you where to start, what to do next. So trying to plan your tasks visually really can increase your productivity. And all our clients, we have a lot of good feedback on this method. That really helped them to decrease their procrastination. And it's very important for us to see results and to see a good feedback from our readers and clients.
Right. So it's so interesting then, you take a blank piece of paper, write down the different tasks that you want to do, give them concrete names, pleasant names, split them large and small, and you even want them to be color-coded around the priorities. I think the ones that encircled in red are the highest priority, blue below that, green below that, and then to draw a path between those various circles and various tasks. So it becomes, in a sense, more of a journey and less of an intimidating long list that people would be so tempted to not even start to undertake.
Uh-huh.
And again, you're trying to come at this with an approach that engages the visual and not just printed
exactly.
Word.
And it's fun to use this method, yeah, because I don't like apps that much, because you have hundreds of apps in your cell phone and it's very easy to procrastinate, because you have the app that it's a Facebook, Instagram, and then you have the app that is helping you organize your priorities. And it's so easy that you just don't use the app for priorities, but you use the social media app. But if you have a paper on your desk, and you just organize your day there visually, you see it all the time, yeah? And it's something that is tangible. You can touch it, and it's much better than to have just some virtual app in your mobile phone.
Right. Before I let you go, I want to give you an opportunity to talk about something that I think will be a big surprise to people if and when they read your book, when at one point you connect the notion of procrastination and of stepping away from procrastination as a kind of heroism. And I think none of us are inclined to think of not procrastinating as something that is heroic. It's a really interesting concept. Explain the connection between not procrastinating and heroism.
Yeah, heroism is a tool of, like we call it little heroism on everyday basis, like because these days a lot of people, they are postponing alarm clock in the morning and they really want to start running, but they are telling themselves, okay, I'm going to start tomorrow. And, you know, tomorrow never happened. And in my point, heroism is the ability to act, to overcome your what we call comfort zone and to do something unpleasant, but be happy that you did it. So, for example, if you start with the first alarm clock in the morning, you feel much happier and you have more energy than if you postpone it 10 times. So heroism is not about big things like to save someone's life next to accident. It's also very important and also very good, but you don't have a chance to do that every day. So mostly heroism is about small steps, small little steps, for example, to stop and to do something you postponed like many weeks, to start the day with the unpleasant task that is in your to-do today list, and so on and so on. So in my point, the heroism is about the ability to act, And there is a nice Japanese tool that all samurais they used, and it was the idea of free heartbeats. That if you know what to do, for example, if you are going next to accident, you really have to act in free heartbeats, because if you don't act in those free heartbeats, higher chance that you don't do anything. So my advice is to tell yourself 3, 2, 1, heroes, act and do that. And it really helps people to overcome what is called overthinking. Because these days, if you are intelligent and if you are creative, you are even creative in coming up excuses in front of yourself. And sometimes it's better not to come up with excuses. It's not good to overthink that. But what is important is to simply act.
Hmm.
And that's the heroism. That's the simple, the everyday small heroism, what we teach in our book.
I like that. Adela Schicker, before we go, please explain to our listeners what procrastination.com is all about.
So procrastination.com is an institute where we help companies with things that they're struggling with. So it started with first procrastination with the book, more talking about company culture, purpose at work, and then we slowly starting coming with topics that are quite important, as Peter says, critical thinking, leadership, you know, better managers, better leadership skills, better decision making based on critical thinking. And so it's the same thing that the book does for individuals, the procrastination.com does for companies.
And this remarkable book is titled The End of Procrastination, How to Stop Postponing and Live a Fulfilled Life. The book is from St. Martin's Essentials and written by Peter Ludwig, translated by Adela Schicker. Peter Ludwig, Adela Schicker, I have very much enjoyed this book. I think I will benefit from it greatly, and I very much enjoyed speaking with both of you. Thank you so much, and best wishes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
You're listening to the Monday Morning Show on WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, your gateway to public radio. The time is exactly 8:43, and here's part two from the Morning Show Archives. We explore the human brain today, and especially the way in which the brain affects the rest of us and other facets of our health, perhaps in ways that many of us don't even realize. My guest in this portion of the morning show is Dr. Eric Braverman with Path Medical Practice and the author of a fascinating book called The Edge Effect, Achieve Total Health and Longevity with the Balanced Brain Advantage. The other subtitle to the book is Reverse or Prevent Alzheimer's, Aging, Memory Loss, Weight Gain, Sexual Dysfunction, and More. That gives you some sense of just all that might be wrapped up in the human brain. And we will talk with Dr. Braverman for the next few minutes about, a little bit at least, about how the brain functions, what can go wrong, and what people can do about that. Dr. Eric Braverman, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you.
One of the things you remind us is that so much of what goes on in the brain is electrical. I think for many of us, that's a hard concept to even grasp.
Well, that's the difference between life and death. You can do an MRI on someone before and after they're dead of their brain, and there's no difference. There's chemistry in a dead person. For 48 hours, human enzymes are working and doing things. But in terms of the brain electrical activity, you're flatline when you're dead.
And
life is a living circuit connected to many other individuals to create one giant human brain. The brain is the only organ which is really special to humanity. I mean, all the other organs are transplantable, replaceable. You can cut out a thyroid, put it on a desk. God forbid a man's testicles are cut off accidentally, he replaces them with a gel. So despite all the emphasis in America on erectile dysfunction, it really isn't a very complex organ. The ovary, when it dies, can be resurrected with one pill on your desk of progesterone, estradiol, and testosterone. Thyroid is replaced on your desk with a pill. Parathyroid is replaced with an injection. Livers can be cut out 80% and they grow back. Hearts are transplantable with baboons or machines, generally machines, for a year and a half now, and you are still human. Scoop out the brain, you're nothing but a corpse. The brain is the distinctive organ. It runs through every part of the body. Electrical tissue of the brain is found in the heart, testicles, pancreas, liver, and every section of the body. But if you open up a person's skull, there is no heart tissue. There are no testicles in their brain, despite the behavior of men from time to time. There are no ovaries in a woman's brain. There are no adrenal gland in the brain. There is no liver in the brain. There is no anything, no lung tissue in the brain. The brain, though, has electrical signals and connections to every section. Is the holistic organizer. So when a person is stressed out, there's no surprise they can get irritable bowel, they can get cystitis, they can get gas, they can get indigestion, they can get ulcers, they can get bacteria overgrowth called H. pylori, they can get die of a heart arrhythmia just by stress and fright. They have back pain. The same amount of back pain in a stressed individual is severe enough for him to waste his time in surgery, while another person whose brain is calm and even tempered can avoid surgery with the worst type of disc disease. The brain controls the body as a basic message of reworking our entire health system.
One of the things about the brain is that there are four biochemicals that apparently have to work together to create who we are and to allow the brain to function well.
Well, I think that's a good point. The brain is, to some people, mysterious because it's so connected to their being, and that it's good to know that antidepressants can affect, or nutrients that affect the brain can affect the whole body. What we've done is we've made the brain as simple as understanding the DNA. We found in the DNA that there are four chemicals that make up the entire DNA code. And there are four chemicals that make up the brain code. There is the dopamine or amphetamine group of the brain that gives you energy, causes you to lose weight, helps you with fatigue, regulates your immune system from arthritis to any type of autoimmune disease, controls your blood pressure and sexuality. It is the juice of the human brain. There is acetylcholine. That is the basic learning eggs of the brain. And that controls memory and attention, a variety of IQ functions. Then there's the GABA, or stability system of the brain. It's basically like a natural Valium. And that is the calming and even-keeled system. And then there's the serotonin, which is sleep and mood. Or it was named serotonin because it stands for serenity tone. Hmm. Serenity tone. And so if it's in the right balance, you have a lot of serenity and good tone. And those four chemicals control a lot of functions, so many functions that you can look at, for example, serotonin, things that affect sleep, and serotonin affect mood, like drugs from Paxil to Zoloft to herbs like St. John's wort to amino acids like tryptophan and sleep hormones like melatonin. They all have some serotonin effect, and they'll shut off everything from OCD to carbohydrate craving to bad PMS, to chronic fatigue disorder, to inflammation, to diabetes, because of the fact that when you don't sleep and you gain weight, it triggers diabetic profile. So the brain core systems control enormous portions of the health of the body.
And it's interesting, too. I think one of the most interesting moments in the book is when you take us through some different personality types, mm-hmm. and you know, sometimes they can be real personality disorders, even if they go seriously enough, but that you are tying to problems with one or more of these chemicals in the brain, that if there's too much or too little of it, it can really
affect our behavior. Well, I'll give you some examples. The basic rule that goes back to Mark Twain's book is Our virtues are vice, and our vices are virtue. Let's take somebody that's perfectionistic. They're generally considered a very practical person, and they try to keep everything calm and even. The problem is they can get very inflexible, too. And that inflexibility makes them sometimes have difficulty with tough love, and they can get taken advantage of. They can hold too much in and develop high blood pressure. They are become inflexible. They're such a stabilizer to everyone that they themselves are slow to perceive health changes in their own well-being. They may be the type of menopausal woman that comes in very late with hair loss because they haven't acted soon enough. They may have trouble telling their husband, you know, this has got to change because they don't want to hurt his feelings. There are a lot of pros and cons to every strength of human character. Take an aggressive personality in medicine. Doctors who try to kill disease, that want to kill death itself, they may misspeak and be less than empathic towards their patients from time to time, or not handle a patient's subtlety and subtle emotions as easily, because our vices are our virtues, and we know the chemical nature of the aggressive person is maybe too much dopamine, and they'll be lacking in empathy. And the stabilizing individual who's calm and even may find it difficult to be assertive and to see the big picture. They may see trees but not the forest. Everyone's strengths and weaknesses are worth studying in great depth, particularly when we're young, because then we can work our entire life on perfecting our character. Most of what we call love on this earth is learning how to love people as they need to be loved, not as they want to be loved, and not as we love ourselves. Despite conventional wisdom that the golden rule is love your neighbor as yourself, it really is quite inadequate to love your neighbor as yourself, because your neighbor may not want to be loved the way you love yourself. They really need to be loved in a different manner. And so life is about studying people's brain and mind and loving styles and trying to adapt to assist them. And knowing their chemistry helps, because a dopamine person might need to cut back the caffeine a little bit, or the green tea or the caffeine, if he wants to be calmer and listen. The GABA person may need to caffeinate and take some energy stuff. And then if you want to understand your teenager, when they pop, when they start smoking, they're looking for extra cognitive enhancement. Nicotine raises IQ initially and attention. And if they're smoking pot, they may be afraid of their aggressive instincts and using pot to suppress aggressiveness, because it releases GABA in the brain but damages judgment. And your alcoholic may find it too difficult to find various meaning in the world and to be assertive. They may be putting too much emphasis on social graces and getting along with everybody and finding self-esteem through society. So they drink so that they can suppress every uneven dimension of themselves in public. So we really do get a brain print. And we do brain printing in our office and teach people about their four IQs, emotional, creative, common sense, and abstract IQ. We teach them about various forms of attention and memory and personality. And everyone can benefit from this kind of brain health checkup. In fact, I predict our country will continue to hemorrhage medically if we don't do a brain health checkup at every age and make it the central organ of the medical system. Right now, there's almost no brain testing in America. I call this brainless. We don't do memory testing from 50 on, so we end up with dementia. We don't do temperament, type, personality of our teenagers, so they're using ecstasy and marijuana in distress. They don't know how to use nutrients. They don't know how to use medications properly. Our young kids are watching the violence and the TV, and they're learning about all these erection problems that men have when they get older. This is what our children's education is like right now. And they don't get a attention deficit computerized testing. They don't get brain printing so that they can enhance their learning. We're really neglecting our most valued possession. So the brain health checkup is going to help at every age of humanity's development, and it's going to be central to a new service of basically to patients and to people, and it's critical.
We should mention that the book also has a very interesting section about memory and memory loss. And
we have a memory checkup right in this book.
All kinds of tests people can take.
If you can't afford to find a doctor or you can't go to a doctor, you go get the Edge Effect book and you get a brain health checkup in the book, at least started.
in the minute that remains, we should address the title of the book. How did you come up with the title, or I should say the term, the edge effect?
My mentor at NYU Medical School claimed that there's an electrical edge, and as soon as your brain goes out of rhythm, your body gets sick. And the edge effect is, if you can get your brain really balanced, your effect is better overall health and well-being. So the kind of cancer and heart disease we see relates back to an everybody, a huge brain imbalance. It's sort of like the, you know, a little sand kernel can make a pearl. Well, a little irregular sand can destroy an entire system of a human being. And so the edge of the brain has an effect throughout the body. It's more important than placebo effect. Placebo effect just means that, you know, your mood's good. You have a great day. The Yankees win here in New York. We're all happy and everyone feels uplifted. But that lasts just for a few hours or a few days. What we're looking for is lasting brain health changes, and that's when you get miracles on 34th Street. So the book Edge Effect should help people get lasting brain health changes and get better results for their life, more abundant life. And that's why we call it Path Medical, because it leads you on a new path in life. And our website for your audience is www.pathmed.com, and we'll send out a free newsletter to everyone who signs up.
The book, again, is called The Edge Effect. It's published by Sterling Publishing. The author, Dr. Eric Braverman. Dr. Braverman, I'm glad we got to talk today on The Morning Show.
Thank you for the honor.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, you will hear my interview with historian and writer Simon Reed talking about his book, Winston Churchill Reporting, Adventures of a Young War Correspondent. This is a fascinating look at an early period of Winston Churchill's life that is not much discussed. On Wednesday, in a Morning Show conversation postponed from last week, I'm going to be speaking with Dr. Edward Kawakami, who is the conductor of the Carthage Philharmonic, and he will have with him several young members of the Carthage Philharmonic talking about the trip to Europe, the tour of Europe, which they just completed. It was actually not a concert tour. It was actually what's called a rehearsal tour, with the orchestra having the opportunity to rehearse and play in some very, very exciting and beautiful places. And we'll be talking with them about that experience. Thursday's Morning Show is going to include a preview of Carthage's upcoming opera workshop, which this time around is titled So Give Three Cheers, a Gilbert and Sullivan Gala. We will be talking about some of the great operettas of Sir Arthur Sullivan and W.S. Gilbert, including The Mikado, The Pirates of Penzance, and HMS Pinafore. And on Friday, I look forward to welcoming back into our studios Laura Cox to talk about the third annual Healing Connections event. This is a special event which is designed for people who are contending with trauma, PTSD, stress, and anxiety. And the event outlines a number of different resources that are available from various entities in the community. So we'll have Laura Cox joining us to talk about that. And we'll have a second interview on Friday's Morning Show as well that will talk about some breakthrough treatments for stress and anxiety. We remind you that The Morning Show is airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock, and you can find several years' worth of Morning Show interviews on The Morning Show Archive, which is housed right on our website, wgtd.org. We're approaching 9 o'clock.